L'association imaginaire est de nouveau aux Utopiales 2025 dont la thématique est singularité. Singularité, c'est un mot qu'on pourrait adapter à énormément de contextes, que ce soit sociologique, psychologique, mais surtout astrophysique. Qui mieux qu'Alastair Reynolds est capable de parler de science-fiction ? Il s'agit ici de l'auteur international, la guest star des Utopiales 2025. Alastair, un énorme plaisir de t'entendre sur les ondes de Radio G au 101.5. C'est traduit par Audrey Plenet, autrice de science-fiction, deux auteurs et autrice du Bélial.
Hello, Alastair. To introduce you a little bit to our listeners, you are a writer, British, specialized in short stories and novel science fiction. You started writing in the end of the 80s. You first published a novel in the year 2000. It was Revelation Space series. In France, you were introduced to us with Bragelonne in 2015, with Poseidon's Children Universe. Then in 2018, with the novel Revenger, also at Edition Bragelonne. And then in 2022, you were published by Le Bélial, another French editing company, with a lot of different works. First, you had The Thousandth Night, which is a novella in the collection Une Heure Lumière. Then the novel Eversion in 2023. House of Sands, like a big work in 2024, who won some prizes because you had the Grand Prix de l'Imaginaire in 2024.
Yeah.
And then this year in 2025, you come back to us with a non-collection, let's say, La Grande Muraille de Mars, published at Édition du Bélial again. And it is based on a previous collection you had published in England, Beyond the Aquila Rift, sorry for the mispronunciation. And this is kind of coming back to your earlier works because it's short stories that are presented to the French public.
I had an earlier publishing phase in France with Presto & Cité.
Yes.
Probably around 2005, 2006, I think that started. And they did...
short story.
Yeah, well, they did the Inhibitor Cycle as well.
Oh, okay, yeah.
They were really nice.
We are well renowned for the Inhibitor Cycles, and that is published at this time.
And then for economic reasons, they couldn't continue with that. And then I moved to Bragelonne, and they were very nice people.
Yeah.
So there's all... I've had a really happy relationship with my French publishers. It hasn't always been economically feasible to carry on with me, but I do think, I'm really happy with the enthusiasm of Bélial. I think it's like really, really fantastic, the design of the books and the sort of enthusiasm they put behind it. But, I mean, as you know, I mean, they really go for it, don't they? Yeah.
Totally, yeah.
Yeah. So I feel like I'm in a very friendly... family sort of,
yes,
so I feel really lucky,
and you have a very great coherence with all these different works, like the novella and the short stories and the novels.
Yeah,
and you say you're happy with your French editors and the French readers, really, really happy to have you and to have you here at Les Utopiales. About the Bélial here in France, they are considered as editors of hard science fiction, and also with books that are very, very detailed about the science part, technology, and all these things. So in France, the Bélial introduces you as a hard science fiction writer, but you may have some reservation about the use of this term, maybe in another context. Could you explain a little bit more?
Yes, I have made statements about having reservations about the term hard science fiction. My problem is I quite like a lot of science fiction that people call hard science fiction. So I don't have a problem with the form as such. But I think the label, it creates expectations in the mind of the reader or in the mind of certain readers that I'm not always willing to deliver on. Because if you say this is hard science fiction, to one reader it might mean there's no faster than light travel. And that's it. To another reader it could mean every single thing that happens in the book is backed up by a calculation and a spreadsheet and a simulation on a computer or something like that. I've no interest in writing science fiction that's like a PhD textbook. For me, it's the core has to be the story, the emotional sort of human connection. There's got to be a good human story, and then the science can kind of add to that and maybe augment it. But it's not solely about the science and the engineering, the technology. So that's why I'm always a little bit reluctant to say I'm a hard science fiction writer, because I think it sort of puts you in a corner, and people make judgments. Then they say, "Oh, that's not for me. Like, I don't want to read that hard science fiction stuff." So as well, I don't want readers to think, well, I don't want to know about that Reynolds guy because he just writes hard science fiction and it's only going to be about nuts and bolts in space, you know? Because I think there's more to, hopefully there's more to what I write than just physics and engineering. You know?
Yeah. You are a scientist, you're an astrophysicist. So maybe it also kind of put a certain color to your in the mind of the
It does. I mean, yes. I haven't been a full-time scientist for 20 years, but you kind of, it's kind of like being in the mafia, you know, you don't really leave it. You know, I've had like the pleasure of still retaining some ties to the scientific community, which has been really nice. So I still have a kind of one foot in science, although I don't do like research or anything, but I still think of myself as kind of connected to the family of science, which I like. And that's been, yeah, it's definitely opened doors for me, particularly after I left full-time science. I think because I was a writer who had been a scientist, or a scientist who had become a writer, that made me a lot more interesting to some parties. You know, I started getting invited to scientific symposia that I never would have been invited to when I was actually a scientist.
Okay.
So it's been quite an interesting sort of second career, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So shall we try to invent a new term as a different than hard science fiction?
Well, human. Well, I started calling it, because people talk about soft science and hard science. That's, and I think, well, I'm sort of in the middle. So I say, well, you know, when you've got a material that's kind of not hard and not soft, sometimes you say it's ductile. So I started saying I write ductile SF.
But it
didn't catch on. I gave up after a while. But I just think it's just said, like, the center ground of science fiction, you know, is where I am.
Okay.
I'm not at that extreme fringe. I'm not over there either.
Is that the danger of labels in general? Yeah. That they can,
I mean, I think like Frank Herbert was sort of just a general science fiction writer, you know.
Yeah, but can we still be general in this era where we like to put labels on things?
Everything is categorized now. But at the same time, I mean, you must know this as well, that there's like a sort of... I mean, a lot of the younger writers who are coming up, they don't really have much interest in genre boundaries. So they, you know, they sort of mix and match different genres, which maybe a few generations ago we would have thought were incompatible.
Mm.
So at the same time as we label everything, there's also a sort of movement to sort of just sort of evaporate all those labels, which I think is quite healthy.
It's good, healthy.
Yeah.
I tried the label human punk lately.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I use cyberpunk or steampunk, but yeah. Human.
Human. Mm. I tried to coming up with those, techno goth and
We will find a list.
Cyber miseralist, humanist. Yeah.
Speaking of technologies, you have been writing for 30 years on AI, robotics, and all these kind of technologies, and often as a warning a little bit, but what they can become and what they can do to humanity and to human intelligence. How do you see the actual evolution of technology, like in these recent years, maybe with AI, because Aversion was with AI and was published years ago, and now we have your characters.
Yeah.
You're well, with us.
I think there's a bit of tension between my what because I grew up in the sort of 80s and 90s, and we had a sort of general understanding of what we meant when we said AI. And I think it was more like HAL 9000 from 2001, like a kind of computer that is actually conscious and has sort of a mind, an interior world. Whereas the term AI, as it's sort of broadly applied now, is more in my expert opinion, it's more like very clever predictive texting.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of like algorithms that are very good at trawling large databases and looking for patterns and then replicating those patterns or extrapolating those patterns when you give them a cue. So you say, like, write me 1,000 words on Julius Caesar. An AI can do that, but it's sort of still an algorithmic exercise in pattern matching and pattern extrapolation. So for me, it's still some way away from what I used to think of as AI. I mean, I for me, AI is like machine consciousness.
Yeah, so we are not quite there yet.
And AI is generating like lots of like really bad misinformation, because even a couple of weeks ago, because I got a new book coming out in the UK, I was kind of Googling to see if there was any early reviews, and there were none. But the AI summary that Google was offering said there had been early reviews, and I thought, I know this is not true, but it says it.
It hallucinates.
Yeah, it's hallucinating early reviews, and I thought they don't exist. So so I think you have to be really skeptical of anything that an AI summary offers you. Yeah, I think there is like sociological value in AI when it's applied in certain areas. Like I could imagine, you know, I've read about AI solving difficult medical problems, you know, like designing drugs or looking for significant patterns in large clinical databases, so you can like estimate the efficacy of different treatments and maybe see things that human observers haven't quite seen because the data is too subtle. So I think there is definitely useful things to be done with AI, but I'm really against AI as a sort of Wikipedia.
Yeah.
I'd far rather that we use
different information.
Yeah, information. Companion. Yeah, that I'm really against. And I'm also against AI as a content generation tool, you know, like a creative component of art and literature. I think it's very bad.
Just about the act of writing. So you have been very prolific, and you had written short stories, novels, and cycles also. Do you have a different methods when you write in the different formats? And also, which one is your favorite?
My favorite is whatever I'm not doing. You know, it's like, yeah, whatever I'm working on, I'd rather be working on something else. Yeah, so if I'm in the middle of a long novel, then I think, oh, I really wish I was writing a short story now, because you get, you know, from a technical point of view, when I'm writing, I don't think there's like a massive difference in my approach as a writer to long form and short form, because I tend to think of it as everything is like units of paragraphs, and there's obviously in a short story you're not using as many paragraphs or as many sections, but it's still you're still building it from the fundamentally same narrative building blocks. So when on a given day, if I'm writing 1,000 words, be it for a short story or a novel, it's still more or less the same technical process. The difference is that with a novel, it could be like a 6-month or 9-month process to write it, and it's quite a hard, like, you know, right? Yeah, you've got to sustain your enthusiasm and your energy levels over a really long period of time, and you're not getting any gratification. You know, there's no one telling you this is going great. You're onto a winner here. This is really brilliant stuff you're writing. No, you have like enormous self-doubts and technical problems, and you have to overcome them on your own. And even when I sit down with my wife and she's, how's it going? I say, oh, I'm really stuck at this point in the book. I've got to resolve a problem. She said, can you tell me it? I said, no, I couldn't even begin to explain the problem to you in a way that would be helpful. It's just, I've got to solve it on my own.
That's your answer. Why did you do this on yourself?
I know. But, you know, we get to the end of it eventually. But the nice thing about the short story is you get that, you start it, you finish it, maybe in a short period of time. So you get that, I always think of it as like an endorphin hit, you know, it's like a sort of adrenaline rush of finishing something. And then you can give it to someone and they can read it and they can tell you whether it's any good or not. So you get that sort of reward
and
cycle. Yeah.
Quick gratification.
Yeah. And even you might even get it into print quite quickly or on the web. So it's like a really quick process. Mm-hmm. Whereas a novel, sometimes you know, when you're writing it, you're thinking this isn't going to be published for like 2 years or 3 years at the earliest. So everything's like really stretched out with novel writing.
Yes. When you have an idea, do you know right away if it's going to be a short story or novella?
Sometimes I start writing something and it sort of goes a bit wrong, and I think, well, this was always meant to be a short story, or this is too much for a short story. Now I have to sort of expand it into a novella.
Yeah.
But I don't often. Yeah.
Well, this is in the process of writing that format can...
Once I start writing something, I'll quickly discover if it's right for that format, and then it might become something larger.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, even like The Dagger in Vishu, which is a novella I wrote last year, it was going to be a short story, and then it sort of became a much longer thing.
Yeah.
And I could have pushed it. I could have pushed on and made it a novel if I'd wanted to. You know, it was sort of on that hinterland.
And what we really, really love and that the Belial offered us of your work is that you have one big novel, which is The House of Sands, and a novella in the same universe and some short story in the same universe.
Yeah.
And it's also great to be able to extend the same universe in different formats. And for the readers, it's also very, very nice experience to have this diversity of format and the same story.
I like writing at different lengths, and a lot of the, like, one of my favorite writers is Stephen King, and he writes across loads of different formats and different approaches to his writing. So I like that sort of versatility.
And everybody thinks that Belial and readers see that science fiction is perfect for that, for the short format, for the middle novella. And
it is. So it's really in a good position, science fiction, that you can write across all those different lengths and different approaches. And as publishers, there's a whole sort of ecosystem of publishers out there that can bring that, you know, you can work with a small press who will publish a novella, and then you can work with a larger publisher for a novel, and then you can work with like a website for a short story, you know, so it's really great that there's that sort of choice of approaches.
Yes.
Yeah.
So true.
Merci beaucoup pour ces réponses que je n'attendais pas aussi argumentées. Notre interview touche à sa fin, malheureusement, et nous ne ferons pas le questionnaire de Proust. Nous n'avons plus le temps. Par contre, il nous reste une dernière question.
One last question, and we won't do the Proust questionnaires.
Quelle musique souhaites-tu que l'on passe?
I'll tell you what you could play. Would you like a French artist?
Yeah.
Because I really like Charlotte Gainsbourg.
Okay.
Do you know again? Yeah. Mm. And she has a song called Deadly Valentine.
Deadly Valentine?
Yeah. Okay. It's on one of her recent albums. It's fantastic.
Maybe we go with that.
It's like an electro, kind of minimalist electro. And I heard it on the soundtrack to the film Megan. Do you know Megan? About the it's like a robot doll.
It's like a horror movie?
Yeah, it's a horror movie about a robot doll. Yeah. Which is quite a fun film, Megan. But they used her music in that film, and I thought, wow, that's fantastic. What is it? And I found out it was Charlotte Gainsbourg, so then I bought the album. So there you are.
Merci beaucoup.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.